Kelly awoke at his accustomed time, 30 minutes before sunrise. At first he was confused to find a slender arm across his chest, but other feelings and memories explained things in a few seconds. He slipped away and moved the blanket to cover her from the morning chill. It was time for ship's business. Kelly pulled on a pair of swim trunks and headed topside. The morning was as fine as he could remember. Then he remembered that what had changed had nothing at all to do with the weather. His head turned at the low, muted rumble of marine diesels. A loud hailer called across the water.
Hey, Kelly!
2 minutes later, the familiar shape of a Coast Guard 41-foot patrol boat eased alongside Springer. Quartermaster First Class Manuel Oreza stepped over the Springer's gunwale. He held out his hand.
Morning, Kelly!
The outstretched hand had a styrofoam cup filled with coffee. Kelly took it and laughed.
Long night, Oreza said. We're all tired, and it's a young crew, the Coast Guardsman explained.
Trouble? Kelly asked. Oreza nodded.
Kinda. Some damn fool turned up missing after that little rainstorm we had last night, and we've been looking all over bejesus for him.
Kelly nodded. Pretty bad, he said. We didn't see much before we went below.
We?
Oreza observed, picking up the rain-soaked halter and tossing it to Kelly. He hoped his friend had found someone. Life hadn't been especially fair to the man. Kelly handed back the cup with a neutral expression. Oreza grinned, heading back to the cutter. He jumped aboard, then pointed to the halter in Kelly's hand.
Don't forget to put your shirt on. Looks like it ought to fit just fine.
He disappeared inside the wheelhouse. There appeared to be someone inside who was not in uniform, which surprised Kelly. A moment later, the cutter's engines rumbled and the boat moved northwest.
Good morning.
It was Pam.
What was that?
Kelly turned. She wasn't wearing anything. Her hair was a mass of tangles, and her eyes were unfocused as though she had not slept well at all. Coast Guard, how'd you sleep?
Just fine.
She came over to him. A kiss, a hug. Kelly grabbed her slender waist and hoisted her aloft.
What do you want for breakfast? He asked.
I don't eat breakfast,
Pam replied, reaching down for him.
Oh,
Kelly smiled.
Okay.
I don't like this.
You don't have to like it, the tall black man said. Henry Tucker unfolded his pocket knife and slit the heavy paper to reveal a plastic container of white powder.
Few hours' work, we turn 300,000.
And this is just the start, the third man said. What do we do with the boat?
Asked the man with the scruples. The tall one looked up.
You get rid of that sail?
Yeah.
Well, we can stash the boat, but probably smarter to scuttle.
Any Angelo?
All three looked over to where the man was lying. Unconscious still, and bleeding.
I guess we scuttle him, too, the tall one observed. Right here ought to be fine.
Maybe 2 weeks, there won't be nothing left. Lots of critters out there,
the third one waved outside at the tidal wetlands.
See how easy it is? No boat, no Angelo, no risk, and $300,000.
I mean, how much more do you expect, Eddie? His friends still ain't gonna like it.
What friends, Tony Piaggi asked without looking.
He ratted, didn't he? How many friends does a rat have?
Eddie Morello shrugged and moved to Angelo's unconscious form. He pulled out a small .22 automatic and fired once. The body spasmed, then went slack. Eddie dragged the body outside, wrapping it in fish netting, and dumped it into their small motorboat. He motored until he found a likely spot, then lifted a few concrete blocks from the boat and tied them to the netting. Angelo sank about 8 feet to the bottom. The water was pretty clear. Eddie could see all the crabs. Angelo would be gone in less than 2 weeks. It was a great improvement over the way they usually did business. Something to remember for the future.
Kelly altered course to starboard. The island was visible now, about 5 miles ahead. Not much to look at, not even a tree. But it was his. It was as private as a man could wish. Battery Island had a long and undistinguished history. Used by the government for defensive purposes since the early 19th century, the island had long ago been declared surplus. and so the island remained unnoticed on a register of unwanted federal property until Kelly had managed to acquire a lease. Pam leaned back on her blanket as they approached, basking in the warm sun. His eyes darted toward her every few minutes to make sure she was still there. Kelly eased the wheel right to pass a large fishing yacht. The sound startled both of them, rapid, short blasts on the fishing boat's diesel horns. On the bridge, a man was waving at them. "What's the problem?" Kelly called over the loud hailer.
"Lost our props," the swarthy man hollered back. "What do we do?"
"Row," Kelly almost replied. He brought his boat closer in to survey the situation. The man on the bridge was about 5'8", 50-ish, and bare-chested. A woman was also visible, also rather downcast.
"I think we hit a sandbar,"
the man explained.
"I can give you a tow if you want. You have good enough line for it?"
"Yes,"
the man replied immediately. The man surprised Kelly. He handled his lines with skill and waved Springer in. Kelly took the towing line and secured it, then nudged his throttle. Kelly brought the boats in very slowly, then jumped ashore to tie off Springer. He got both boats snugged in, then turned to the strangers.
"This is yours?" the man asked, looking around.
"Sure enough," Kelly replied. "Welcome to my sandbar."
"Sam Rosen," the man said, holding his hand out.
"John Kelly," he said, shaking hands.
"My wife, Sarah."
Sarah was short, overweight, and somewhat frumpy.
"Somebody needs to thank you for your help,"
she observed in a New York accent. "Law of the sea, ma'am." Kelly turned to Pam, then realized he didn't know her last name.
"Hi, I'm Pam."
"You'll want to freshen up. We have all day to look at the problem." Kelly led them off to his home. "What the hell is that?" Sam Rosen asked. "That was a bunker that had been built in 1943. The entire structure was reinforced concrete and was as sturdy as it looked. A second, smaller bunker lay beside it. This place used to belong to the Navy," Kelly explained, "but I lease it now. Mind if I ask what you do?"
"Surgeon,"
Rosen replied. "Oh, yeah."
"Professor of surgery,"
Sarah corrected. Kelly turned to Sarah. "You a doc too, ma'am?"
"Pharmacologist. I also teach at Hopkins."
Kelly nodded, impressed, then dialed the combination lock and pulled the heavy steel door open. The inside of the bunker surprised the visitors. Kelly had turned it into a spacious residence with painted dry walls and rugs.
"Nice," Sarah observed.
"A friend helped me get the lease. Surplus government property."
"He must be some friend," Sarah said.
"Yes, he is."